are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
From heritageradionetwork.org. I'm coming to you live from the studio in the back of Roberta's restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Today we are doing an interview with Peter Eastlake. He is doing the wine for the Great Googa Mooga Festival. So we're really excited. That's coming up May 17th, 18th, and 19th. We're going to be there at Googa Mooga, hanging out, having fun, eating food, listening to music, and drinking wine. So, Peter, do I have
that
you with me?
Good.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you. So, Peter, you are taking care of the entire wine program that's happening at Googa Mooga, yeah?
I am. I certainly am, yeah.
So tell us, just tell us everything. What does that mean? How did this happen? Just, yeah, we want to hear it all.
Yeah, well, it's very exciting, first and foremost, that we can have wine, we can, you know, serve wine, experience wine in this kind of atmosphere in this setting. There's a festival that I do with Superfly, the founders of the Great Googa Mooga, in San Francisco, called Outside Lands. And for the last 5 years, we've had this really large sort of airplane hangar-sized wine tent there, where it was my idea 6 years ago to invite winemakers to come into that fog-free space, because the festival is in Golden Gate Park, and pour wine for people while they're at the festival. So, mm-hmm. That's something that I've always thought is so cool, because wine is rarely outside of its cute little box in restaurants.
Yeah. And it's rarely outside.
So, yeah, and so it is outside, yeah. Outside the box, and it just every year feels more and more like it's supposed to be there. And I think the lineup this year at Googa Mooga it excites me. I'm certainly looking forward to drinking a lot of wine there, mm-hmm. and it's going to be fun.
Yeah, it is. So tell me, how do you go about choosing the wines? Do you have relationships already with winemakers, or do you start with a list, like a fantasy list in your head?
I do. I'm a wine merchant. I have three shops in Berkeley, California, and so when I'm not thinking about pouring wine at festivals, I am tasting with importers and winemakers, and that's my life. So throughout the year and throughout my career, obviously there's people who just, stand out winemakers, sommeliers, importers, regions. And so I sort of have all of these, you have all of these up on this sort of sky-high grid, and you think, okay, I need a little bit of this, I need a little bit of this, and I need a little bit of this. And it's a puzzle, and you put it together. And in New York City, in Brooklyn, it's so much fun because we have, such a great somm scene, obviously one of the best in the world. Yeah. So having sommeliers who are this sort of trend spotters and makers of wine in New York involved is really exciting. I don't do that at Outside Lands. I just rely on our local California winemakers. So you kind of start with your wish list of, wouldn't that be cool? God, that would be cool. We should drink some of that. That would be cool. And then you just piece it all together and call the right people and get them fired up about doing something that they haven't done before, and making them understand it, because it's a lot to wrap your head around when you've never done something like that before. And tens of thousands of people, and how does that work? There's a lot to it.
Yeah.
Just, making it all happen.
I'm sure there is. Is your first step to reach out to sommeliers that are in New York, because you're from the West Coast?
There's some relationships. Paul Greco has been someone who, when I used to be a wine merchant back in New York with Best Sellers many moons ago, and Paul was, really one of the best sommeliers in New York at the time at Gramercy Tavern, and he's always been someone who I've known as, you know, being a fearless, you know, leader of wine in New York City. And Paul was very helpful to me, you know, last year reconnecting with folks like Daniel Janus, Aldo Sam, and introducing me to Carl Rozewski, who's amazing, Laura Maniac, and, you know, putting together sort of a Sam lineup that really speaks to, you know, the in some ways, the history, you know, of Sams in the last 20, 30 years in New York, and some of the great ones who are doing it to it today.
Yeah.
So Paul was really helpful in establishing and making some relationships for me, and I think sommeliers have a lot of fun with this because it is truly outside of the formality of being a som at a restaurant. This is you know, tank top and temporary tattoo territory. It's very different from Friday night at cetera, you know, whatever restaurant. So they love it because it's truly outside of their box, but way inside the box, you know.
Yeah.
People are into the wine. So
I love that phrase, wine. That little double entendre about taking wine outside of the box, just literally and metaphorically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's you know, ultimately, I think that's why this works. You know, I think there's a lot of ways that you can try to kind of smash up wine and rock and, you know, winemakers are rock stars and all this kind of stuff. But
yeah, like you can still have fun, but drink like a grown up.
Yeah, I mean, I think the core of it, the, you know, primitive connection is just this based in an experience, you know, our passion points. We love eating, we love drinking, we love listening to tunes, we love being outside, we love hanging out with people. And there's a confluence of all this at the Great Gugamuga and Outside Lands at Bonnaroo, places like that, and it's awesome. You know, at the end of the day, you think, oh, man, I got to come back tomorrow, or on Monday morning, you say, damn, I got to wait a whole year for this to happen again.
Yeah.
And it's fun to, when all of those things that we're passionate about happen at once.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's over, but it gives us sort of a sense of, you know, this should be a part of your life. This can be a part of your life. You can have a party in your backyard like this if you want to. So it's I like sort of what it does sort of for the possibility of wine and eating and drinking and music and all that stuff.
Yeah. I saw Laura Maniac from Cork Buzz there last summer, and she was doing the champagne program. Is that going to be happening again?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, last year she did an absolutely insane conceived idea that we had, which of a speed tasting, where literally people would, in the Extramuga area, rest in peace, Extramuga, would go through stations with Soms and experts and just whiz through the world of wine, you know, and like musical chairs, 4 minutes was up and then boom to the next station. So that was a lot for Laura and her team to take on last year, and bless her for
it. Was a lot for the people
that
who drank it too, trust me.
This year we're going to keep it very simple and celebratory, which is not simple once you have 30,000 people looking at you, but champagne. You know, Laura's a real sort of leader in New York, banging the drum about champagne, and so really looking forward to her selections of champagne and just getting all that fizzy energy into the festival.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what wines ultimately, I want to know, did you choose? But I want to know what your process was like. And, like, you know, Gugamuga's unique from other sort of music festivals because it's going to bring in so many food and wine people. So you're going to have more discerning people drinking the wine than normally you would. So how did you keep in mind, you know, the people who are showing up because of the wine you picked, as opposed to the people who are showing up, you know, just to have fun and listen to music? I mean, do you have a little bit of something for everyone there?
Yeah, that's a great question, because you don't, you know, when I first approach it, I think, okay, Brooklyn, you know, you look around at wine stores in Brooklyn and they all, you know, some really sharp shops, and back obviously for New York too, and Berkeley or Boston, wherever you are, you know, wine shops today are a good sort of representation of what's selling well, what's doing well, and you know, I don't think this festival space is for your, you know, big multi-million case brand necessarily. I think showing people wines that would be in the kind of restaurants that, you know, get written about and talked about and are accessible, not, you know, you're never going to eat at this place style, but, you know, it's a cross-section. It's fun to show people wine that, you know what, you probably would never try this wine. You probably would never have had this wine, this Hungarian sparkling Muscat. But there's five people queued up for it, and it looks like fun, so I'm going to try it. You know, you really have to, you have to have a cross-section. You have to have what's exciting and interesting and classic, new, you know, real deal. Like, I'm just big on authenticity, which is a overused word, but, you know, wines that are real, wines that are cool, wines that are interesting, wines that are made by people who will stand there and tell you about them. Mm-hmm. And there's so many cool narratives and stories behind the wines. Like, in, you know, this year from, gosh, anything from what the guys at Red Hook went through, which is a vintage that wouldn't be wished on anybody,
yeah.
You know, of biblical proportions.
Mm-hmm.
And emerging from that, you know, this rebirth and, you know, that story. And then
you're going to, you know, have the Red Hook Winery there at the festival.
What's that?
The Red Hook Winery will be there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You bet. And Abe, who's their one of their great winemakers, who's from California, will be out there. And we've got a heap of really just fantastic. I think we have, you know, really the sort of cutting edge of California in the house at Gugamugu, which is very exciting to me, because I feel like, you know, as someone who's been in the wine business in New York, California really
totally is underrepresented.
It never really mattered. You know, beyond your, you know, 30 case allocation of Kistler Chardonnay at whatever restaurant, and gosh, you know, some sort of blue chip stuff, you know, California does not matter in New York. It's an import market. But California now, you know, with a couple of cool vintages with 11 and 10, you know, there's these more kind of Euro-tuned wines that are California. They're not, you know, quirky, prickly sort of takes on, you know, Europe and sunshiny California. But California's got a lot of really cool stuff,
yeah,
that I often see. And this is the stuff that I saw in my stores, and I often feel like, you know what, New York City, when I go there, I never see this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to start seeing it on wine lists, and I know a bunch of these wineries that we're going to have, you know, they left at the opportunity to be at Gugamugu because they know that market, you know, outside of their mailing list and San Francisco restaurants, New York City restaurants, that's where they want to be.
Good. Well, that's something to look forward to.
Very much so, yeah.
I mean, they are there, but who can afford them? So that's why something like Gugamugu, you know, gives you an opportunity to taste things you normally can't.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, and my shops, I always sort of the best sellers way back when all the wines were under $10. And, you know, value is really important to me. You know, and I think this sort of the lineup of California that's going to be there is the cutting edge of California, and it's not the most expensive.
Right.
You know, these are sort of forgotten, you know, plots of Trousseau Gris and Cinsault and stuff like that made by people who have been, you know, hammering away at this over the last, you know, 10 years and are really getting it now.
you know?
Not that they didn't get it then, but...
Do you have a couple of favorites we should be looking out for?
Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff. I'm really psyched... I really love the wines from Forlorn Hope right now, which is this winemaker, Matthew Rourke. He's a very cool guy. You know, had a day job making really good wines, and started his own label, you know, kind of in the vein of Abe Scherner with Skolium Project. You know, 47 cases of this, 19 cases of this, just minuscule quantities, but, you know, dozens, seems like, of different variations of wine. But, you know, he's pouring 2012 Torontes and Alvarello, you know, Portuguese varietal from Lodi. Stuff like that to me is, like, very cool and exciting. In Pursuit of Balance, which is a you know, mash up with Wingap, Sandy Rajpar, who's, you know, a great sommelier, and Leoko. They're sort of doing a, you know, balanced California with Trousseau Gris, Ascenso Rosé, and Raj's Santa Barbara County Chardonnay. So many good things. Copan, Massican, Scribe. There's so much good stuff.
Yeah.
Elfman is going to do really well there.
Yeah, sounds amazing.
Yeah.
So when you went through the wines mm-hmm. that you were looking at, like, did any of them, do you think about the music? Do you think about the atmosphere? I mean, you must take in consideration it's summertime.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a good point. You know, last year we were fortunate in that we had, you really don't know which way the weather's going to go, obviously.
That's
May and New York can be hopefully clear and not raining. Last year we just had this, you know, blue sky, perfect weather. It was beautiful. But even perfect in the East Coast, in this upper 70s, low 80s, it's warm enough that, you know, white and rosé is going to sort of get the nod and bubbles. And so I'm sort of trying to err on the side of a lot of white, rosé, and sparkling wine.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like Chocoli and Vigna Verde, just, you know, things that you would want to drink at 1 o'clock on a Saturday.
Yeah. And still keep going for the rest of the day.
Or, you know, at sunset on a Saturday when you've been, you know, you've been on your feet all day, having a good time, and you're thirsty.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's a beer tent too. So, you know, thirst quenching, interesting reds that have balance and aren't too extreme, over the top. Whereas in San Francisco, where the temperature rarely exceeds 65 at outside lands, and there's a lot of fog, and it could be in the mid-50s by, you know, by the time the sun kind of goes behind the fog, you know, we have a lot of petit sirah and, you know, sort of big classic, you know, California wines.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that would, I would imagine it would pose a little bit of a struggle for you, because you have this amazing opportunity to curate this list and these winemakers, but you have to think, like, it's a festival.
It's
like, you can't get too serious. Like, you don't want to go, like, you want people to try new things, but you don't want to go too esoteric necessarily. I mean, it has to be sort of very fine-tuned for the
yep.
setting that you're in.
Yeah. And, you know, I would look at the list that I have, and, you know, it's a really good thing that you're bringing up, because, you know, as a merchant, I think about this on a daily basis. You know, we love Riesling, but you can't have a whole store of Riesling, or you just reduce the total number of potential customers to one hand. You can't do that.
Yeah.
And so you need to have, you know, representative kind of core sample of lots of different things. And I definitely think we have that. I think the list there is tilted towards people who are in food and wine, people who go out to, you know, go out to eat in Brooklyn and New York, and the kinds of places that they go out to, these are the kinds of wines that are on those lists.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I, and in some cases, wines that should be on those.
Yeah.
Should be on those lists, and that maybe they'll discover. But then you have, you know, your importers, like, gosh, I mean, we have Kermit Lynch, Terry Thies, and Louis Tresner. And those are three importers that essentially are the heart and soul of, like, winemakers. You know, they represent some of the most kind of soulful wines that are made today.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether you're a winemaker in California or a sort of a mid-20-something newish to wine drinker living in Fort Greene, you got to know these guys.
Mm-hmm.
You got to know their wines.
Yeah.
And I feel like 10 years ago, maybe, you know, you're sort of the training wheels wine was, you know, maybe it was like a Rosenblum's Inn or it was great, you know, Borsal Garnacha or something, you know, which are, you know, totally cool wines, both of those. But I feel like now the new to wine drinker is going right for esoteric.
Mm-hmm.
So esoteric is almost now kind of becoming mainstream.
Yeah, it's the new normal.
Which has tilted my sort of way of looking at, how, you know, 5 years ago at Outside Lands, I was thinking I got to have you know, X amount of Chardonnays, you know. And here I didn't really feel that pressure. I just wanted to let it organically flow. Like, let me just reach out to a lot of really good people who've got great stuff and see where it falls.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
So Gugamuga markets itself, presents itself, I think, first and foremost as a food festival.
Mm-hmm.
So that must influence you when you're thinking about your choices. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think the way you were describing how people are showing up to try new wines that they normally, you know, wouldn't be able to get at restaurants. A lot of the same thing happens with the food. People show up because, you know, they might not be able to afford a night at, you know, so-and-so fancy place. But like this gives them an opportunity to try the food in like a really
sure.
accessible way. So what's
yep.
the relationship, if there is one, between like any of the restaurants that are going to be there or how you thought about the wine? Is there any pairings that are happening?
You know, another good question. You're good at this.
Yeah.
I don't look at the food list. I know Tiffany and team, they do an amazing job putting together it's just a crazy good list of food. I think the wines that I have, there's so much, the central sort of, you know, thread of continuity with these wines is balance, and balanced wines can do a lot of things. And so I really don't, if I sort of start getting into, okay, we have, you know, 10 vendors with fried stuff, and
it's too much.
Make myself go crazy.
yeah.
And I think if you just have balanced wines and know, you know, it's more fun now when I look at the list and I'm like, okay, a lobster roll, boom, you know,
mm-hmm.
which way do you want to go with that?
Yeah.
Or fried foods, okay, you could do that, or you could throw a Manzanilla Sherry at it with Carlo Rizzuzzi. There are so many options.
Yeah.
And there are so many ways to kind of, and that's the fun. It's like,
choose your own adventure.
Infinite, you know, they're, exactly, choose your own adventure. There's 85 different, at least, food purveyors and 105 wines that we're pouring, so thousands and thousands of ways to slice that well.
Yeah, so much to eat and drink.
Like really well. Yeah. And you know what? And the cool thing is, all I should mention too, the wine, you know, that's a lot of wine, and if you're just there for an afternoon, it's like, oh, that's cool, there's 105 wines. You know, I'm only going to buy a glass of, you know, however many wines. All of the wines are available to purchase in a taste size or a glass size. And the taste is
good to know.
$2-3.
Yeah.
You know, and we use Govino glasses, which are really like the thing that makes this in some ways possible, because it's a legit wine glass that you can't smash and break into pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really honors kind of like the wine tasting experience. And, you know, you could taste 10 different wines for $20.
And possibly still be standing.
Oh, it's smaller. I guess I should be careful. That's what I say.
yeah, actually, I mean, you just answered my next question.
The taste size.
Yeah.
It gives you a nice little hit of the wine.
Yeah.
You know, flavor wise, but then you know, all the wines are available in a standard, you know, restaurant mm-hmm. size.
Yeah.
Or, glass as well. So.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
Really excited about it.
Well, that's really, really helpful that you told us, because I was going to ask you, like, what is the best way to sort of navigate the wines, especially if you're mm-hmm. coming and you don't necessarily have, like, an agenda or a plan or know the wines, but you do want to get, like, a nice cross-section, and you kind of want to, you know, dig deep a little bit while you're there, because
mm-hmm.
why not? You have the opportunity to.
Yeah, sure. And, this, you know, this is what people in the wine business, you know, when you get invited to so-and-so's, you know, portfolio tasting, and it's at noon on a Tuesday. Like, how do you possibly go in and taste 150 different wines and go back to work, even if you work at a wine store where you can get away with that kind of thing? You know, you go to a trade tasting, you spit because you'll, you know, fall face first in mm-hmm. 20 minutes if you don't. I always like to, you know, kind of approach a huge room like that, you know, kind of you take a little reading on yourself. How am I feeling today? Thirsty. Okay, I'm feeling thirsty. Or it's really warm, like I want something kind of cold and crisp, and boom. You know, the way our stations are laid out, I mean, it's you know, each winery, each importer is, you know, prominently signed. And we'll have, you know, our wine lists you know, print it up so that you can walk over and look at kind of a blown up sign and say, okay, here's a bunch of wines. And really, it's the tent. The cool thing about that, I love walking through the tent when it's in. I'm totally anonymous. No one, I'm a, you know, under 5.5 foot guy, so no one pays any attention to me. And I just kind of walk through and listen to people, and people just ask questions. They're like, I'm kind of feeling like I want a something from, you know, that's Sauvignon Blanc, and then the stations, the people who are at the stations, the winemakers. It's a collaborative thing, and they say, you know, you should try, boom, you haven't been over there yet? Oh, you got to go over there. So there is this kind of collaborative thing to it. But when you get 1,000, 1,500 people in the tent at once, you know, we have 32 stations, so it absorbs it well. All the stuff gets consumed. But, you have to take a reading on yourself and then, you know, maybe ask at a station or just kind of open your eyes and look around, and then go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
And that's a lot. And there's a lot with those 32 stations. I mean, with the sommeliers, with Daniel Janus, Aldo Somm, Carlo Verzuski, Laura Maniac, Paul Greco. Holy smokes.
Yeah, it's just such an amazing opportunity.
Yeah. I guarantee you, you know, if you're going to be within 10 feet of one of the best sommeliers in the world.
Yeah.
Which
and potentially some of the best
wild.
Chefs in the world, too.
It's crazy.
It is really crazy.
That is really crazy. At a Flaming Lips concert. I mean, come on.
There's literally what something for everyone. Yeah, well, I just want to ask, as we're winding down, what are you really hoping to see? Like, what will... In your ideal world, what will happen, and that'll make you feel like you achieved your goal, your wine program is completely successful. Like, what do you really want to see take place in, over the weekend?
Oh, smiles, happiness. You know, you just want people to have a good time. You really, at the end of the day, this is always about the experience that people have. It's not about me. You know, it's really about people having fun. And again, having that sort of Monday morning syndrome where you wake up and say, damn, I want to do that again today. but it's over. And that's sort of the festival hangover where it sort of goes to a place that you can't really easily replicate during the calendar year. And, you know, you just want people to have a great time. And, you know, wine specifically... Sure, it would be really cool if I knew that tons of people walked out of there and, you know, got turned on to, a Chocolate, or they met the importer. Oh, my God, I met, you know, the importer who brings in all this wine that I've been drinking at, you know, at this restaurant. And sort of feeling a little connected and feeling like, hey, wine is actually kind of accessible to me, and it's not this, you know, snooty in the box thing. So... just, you know, fun, accessibility. That's always what I want out of, you know, people at a wine experience like that.
Great. Well, I, for one, could not be more excited for Guga Muga. I'm assuming you'll be there all 3 days?
I certainly will.
Okay, Peter.
Certainly will. And look forward to it. And thanks again so much for having us on.
Thank you so much, Peter. It was great talking to you.
You bet.
This is Sari signing off from heritageradionetwork.org. Get your tickets for Guga Muga at gugamuga.com. It's taking place in Prospect Park, May 17th, 18th, and 19th. Like I said, we're going to be there hanging out, having a lot of fun. If you want to listen to this interview, if you didn't catch it live, you can check back at heritageradionetwork.org, or all of our radio interviews are available as podcasts on iTunes and Stitcher. Thank you so much. Have a good night.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.